Here's an experiment for you. Take passionate experts in human resource technology. Invite cross-industry experts from inside and outside HR. Mix in what's happening in people analytics today. Give them the technology to connect. Hit record. Pour their discussions into a beaker. Mix thoroughly, and voila, you get the HR Data Labs podcast, where we explore the impact of data and analytics to your business. We may get passionate and even irreverent, but count on each episode challenging and enhancing your understanding of the way people data can be used to solve real-world problems. Now, here's your host, David Turetsky.
Hello and welcome to the HR Data Labs podcast. I'm your host, David Turetsky, and like always, we try and find for you people inside and outside the world of human resources to give you the latest on what's happening in the world today and how you can do your job better. Today, we have with us Ashri Kohn, who is the fractional CTO and founder of Red Corner. Ashri, how are you?
I am fantastic, actually.
That's good to hear. So, Ashri, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about Red Corner?
So I'm a 20-year veteran of the tech industry, and like all 20-year veterans of the tech industry, we dream of farming and owning a coffee shop and never looking at a computer screen again.
That's right.
But for the time being, I am the founder of Red Corner, which is a fractional CTO firm. We do technical recruiting, we do dev agency representation, and of course, we position and support fractional CTOs across any number of industries.
Excellent. So, Ashri, people may have known that about you, but what's one thing that no one knows about you?
I grow non-fun plants in my garage.
Non-fun plants. Okay.
Yeah.
What are non-fun plants?
Peppers. Tomatoes. Shishito peppers. I've had great success with hydroponically.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a nice little hobby. It's an expensive hobby, but you know what?
Oh, I've heard. Yes,
there is. There's something about growing about a kilo worth of shishito peppers every month or so, and then
do you go to the local like farmers markets and sell them there?
No, it's just for personal consumption.
Really,
it's just fun. It's fun. It's fun to replicate Mother Nature, right?
Oh, it is.
You get a lot of respect for nature when you Absolutely. Have to replicate the whole thing.
I have a quarter of an acre, probably a little, maybe a third of an acre in the back of my house where we actually grow corn and sunflowers and potatoes and cucumbers. Mm-hmm. And Dwight loves this, but I'm Farmer Jones certain times and I'm David Turetsky consultant other times. So there are a lot of times I actually have lots of dirt underneath my nails, which is always fun.
Yes, that is always fun. I want to be where Dwight lives because that's clearly not a background.
No, Dwight lives in a beautiful city of Phoenix, Arizona. And it gets really hot there during the summer. But otherwise, I mean, he basically lives in air conditioning most of the time anyways. But he came from Minnesota. And so I think he would rather be in Arizona than Minnesota, especially now when it's really cold.
Well, right now it's snowing here, so, you know, it's like sand that fallen from the sky. Yeah. It's pretty for the first day, and then it's a slushy, nasty mess the rest of the 3 months.
If there's anybody who knows about snow, it's my friend and co-host, Dwight Brown.
So glad I'm out of it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was telling Ashri. Today, we have the really cool opportunity to talk about recruiting, and our topic is going to be technical recruiting and how it's broken. Ashri, what is technical recruiting?
Technical recruiting is the finding of candidates, the hiring, and the onboarding of technical individuals, software developers, architects, and so on and so forth in the technical field, primarily IT or software development and or software development. That is technical recruiting 101.
Okay. So it's people who can code, it's people who can lead those organizations.
Yeah.
It doesn't get into like scientists and other things. It's just strictly people who are the developers, the programmers, right?
Yes. And this problem that we're going to be talking about is indicative specifically to the software development field. Mm. because we have no way of qualifying someone's skill set in an appropriate manner. There's no degree, there's no certifying body that says, hey, this guy's a good developer, this gal knows what she's doing, right? There is no way of achieving that. And so it's really lick your finger, stick it to the wind, and So a lot of the HR processes around technical recruiting are borrowed from how they hire marketing individuals, business individuals, accounting, you know, many regulated fields that are easy. Hey, you have your CFA and you haven't been fired. You're hired. There we go. That's pretty easy.
Right. So then let's just get into it. What's broken about the technical recruiting? Is it that you can't qualify someone? Is it that, you know, testing and assessments aren't good enough?
So it's full circle. So we're going to start with the primary problem is that technical recruiting is done by HR primarily. Huge mistake, because they don't have the technical skill to actually be able to read between the lines. We have so many acronyms and so many names of technologies, and they change all the time. 2 years ago, we were using technologies that we're not using now. We're done. That's it. 2 years ago. 2 years ago in marketing, you were still doing marketing the same way. Maybe now there's more influencers and TikTok. I don't know anything about marketing. But so they don't have the skill set to understand parallels between technologies, to read between the lines. You did this, so you'll be able to do that. And because HR is doing the technical recruiting aspect, the candidate pre-screening, the hiring managers, your CTO, your director of engineering, manager, whatever it is, needs to write a job description that looks like a grocery shopping list that, you know, you'd give your partner before Thanksgiving. It's basically they don't trust HR to actually know what they're doing. So they're going to ask for everything. Literally almost to the point of there's this one requirement that keeps popping up and I see it and I lose my mind. Experience in agile. Okay. I don't know what that means, first of all, and I'm in the field. I have no idea what that means, first of all. But the way I can explain it is, do you know how to use a keyboard? Yeah, I know how to use a keyboard. That doesn't need to be in the job description. Everybody knows how to use a keyboard, right?
Well, there was a day, Ashri, there was a day when we went from waterfall to agile. I remember it because I was part of it. And we went from having a requirements document, which was a volume, kind of like what, and I know this is going to sound like an old statement as well, a phone book. And we then went from that thickness of requirements to kind of requirements on the fly and being able to, you know, we had some stories we developed up front, but really having the developer communicate more with the product manager and kind of that more fluidly than it was. So I remember why that used to be asked. I don't know why it is today, because pretty much everybody should be familiar with that.
My theory is that everyone is sourcing from one job description, copy paste, change this, and then another one copy paste and change this. Heck, I do that all the time. I don't want to write a whole job description. It's nuts. It takes a lot of time. But ChatGPT is fantastic for this kind of stuff. And then you remove the BS. You remove all the BS and that's it. But I tell him, hey, write a job description for this company. It's an overview of the company. I'm like, that's fantastic. How'd you know? Don't ask. Right. Well, we don't ask questions. So the problem starts with HR and then is made worse by the hiring managers who don't trust HR. So now they're asking for everything, casting a very wide net, right? And saying, I guess you need to have 3 years of this technology and 10 years of that technology, because as if 3 years and 10 years actually makes a difference. Mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3 years tops. After that, you're basically a professional. You're an expert in this field. You're an expert in this tech. So we don't typically want to even put years of experience. You have exposure or an expertise.
Done. I'd be specious if anybody who said they had 3 years of generative AI at the moment, you know, because really it's not really, I mean, yeah, it's been around for a while. But I don't think anybody really has that much of experience.
Literally no one can have this experience. And this has happened many times.
Sure.
There's a very famous guy. He wrote a beautiful technology that we all used, Fast API. and he saw a job, and he's the guy who wrote it. He created this technology, right? And he saw a job description for someone asking for 7 years of experience in that tech. He's like, I guess I created this thing. Right. I maintain it, and I wouldn't be able to get that job.
Right.
For using it, right? And that's just one of like thousands and thousands of job descriptions like that.
So do you think that even in the world of recruiting, when it comes to assessments where you ask people to do a practical, like you give them a problem to take care of and you watch how they do it, you time it so you know that they're not going off and getting a resource and coming back. So even in that circumstance, you still think that that loop is broken?
Yes. So now we jump onto the screening, right? Yep. So the HR person will get on the phone with the individual and say, okay, and what you do this and what you do there and why do you have a, you know, career gap of 12 seconds? And, you know, Sam Altman, by the way, will have to explain, why does he have a career gap as CEO for 12 seconds?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He's not going to be able to get a job after this.
Well, I think he actually was hired by Microsoft for half a minute. So,
all right, fair enough. But then clearly he's not a team player because he got fired afterwards again. Yeah. Back and forth. I don't know what he did. There's going to be an HBO movie about this guy for sure.
There will. Yeah, of course.
You know, so they'll get on to a screening call and they'll try to pre-validate. Oh, do you have this? Checkbox. Yes. Do you have that? Checkbox. But you know what the problem with checkboxing things? You miss a lot of nuances because a human can't be fit into checkboxes. You can't fit a human into a box. Sure. It's very, very difficult. So you have to be able to read between the lines without using an ATS, right? An automatic tracking system or whatever it's called. Without using one of those, read the resume and say, I understand what this person has done because I'm in this field. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's problem number three. Now, they get passed over. A lot of good candidates will get filtered out. I got filtered out all the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even though I was perfect for the job, I got filtered out. Why? Because I had consultants somewhere at some point in my career, and they don't like that. Yeah, right? Why would you want to hire free-thinking entrepreneurial types that are very creative and business-minded?
And you're talking to two consultants, too. So
right.
You know, hire those consultants. They know what they're talking about.
Yeah, right. But why would you want such individuals working for you who can really contribute and be creative and drive your company forward?
Right.
It's very scary for weak people. That's basically the way
never thought about it that way.
I'll put it that way. Yeah. You know? So they get filtered out this way because either they didn't go through the proper check boxes. They didn't fit. Oh, are you 68% of the requirements? Oh yeah. You know, which by the way, for any candidates listening, just copy the
description.
Copy the whole job description, put it into your resume, put the font to white, and let the ATS have fun with it, and you're 100% guaranteed to be caught. Right there, done.
Right,
right.
Right?
By the way, we've had lots of episodes with ATS technology masters who've said very similar things because that's just the way that algorithm works.
Yeah, it's search engine optimization, and it's bad at it, right? And so now you've got an entire industry around this helping candidates write proper resumes, but not proper resumes to really show their skill set. Resumes to get through the ATS phase. This is like measuring click-through rate. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised if Google Analytics will come out with a technology to track whether your resume was read or not, right? What's your CTR? 4.5%. That's not bad. Maybe we can improve. Yep. You know, put an ad in there. I don't know. So
now there's a novel concept.
It is.
Seriously, right? So you've got candidates now writing completely bullshit resumes, right? Mm-hmm. You can take 50% of it, maybe 50% is accurate. The rest is I have led this and I have done that, buddy. You're screwing a light bulb. Like you didn't lead a lighting engineering team, huh? Let's relax. It was a light bulb, right? Yeah. So you don't even know what their role is anymore. What have they actually done? So you can't even gauge on the resume. It's basically useless at this point. Now, if they miraculously get in front of the hiring managers, because apparently there's not enough developers out there because of all of these issues, the hiring manager will be forced to take them through an unbiased approach to technical assessments. We have to evaluate the human. We can't have any human input on it. But here's the problem with technical recruiting and developers. Developers and software engineers are wildly creative individuals. They're basically artists that are forced to wear pants and work.
I don't know, I actually know some developers who didn't wear pants, but they wore like pajamas or they wore shorts, but
they have to wear something.
Yeah, right? They do have to wear exactly something,
you know. And so they're artists, they're creatives. You ask 100 developers to build something, 100 of them will build it in a different way.
Of course.
There is no way to evaluate, right? And so they either do technical exams. Hey, can you answer these questions? Why should I? Just Google. Completely useless. Retention of knowledge is so 1990s. We don't need this anymore, right? Mm-hmm. We need creativity and problem solving. How do you even measure creativity and problem solving?
Yeah. It's no and how do you convey it? How do you convey it in messaging? Yeah.
Right? So they'll either pass them through a technical exam online or a take-home exam. Yeah, that's so cute. Take-home exams are for junior developers that haven't proven. You tell a senior developer there's a take-home exam, they literally hang up on you. I've hung up on interviews. I'm like, yeah, nope. Bye. See ya. Oh, a psychometric exam? Oh, even worse. Yo, no, you're not even getting out of the gate with this one.
Right, but Ashri, in that case, the psychometric goes to the team building, right? Making sure that the people who have their personalities, how will they get along? And you have to admit, though, that it's important for the team to get together when there are multiple developers.
Absolutely, and the engineering manager's job, the one who's managing that team, that's their job to get a sense of the individual. They have to know their people. They can't base themselves on a report is a team player. You know what? I did a psychometric exam and apparently I'm not a team player. And I'm not entrepreneurial enough.
Really?
I'm not.
You're the founder of this company, right?
Yes. I'm the founder of this company.
Just want to make sure I remember that correctly.
Yeah. Right? So they pass you through all of these hoops and sometimes multiple interviews, and sometimes they're redundant because now the CTO wants to meet you and this guy wants to meet you and that gal wants to meet you over 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks. Well, the candidate's going to leave at some point or he's going to get annoyed, right? Because you did all of this and then you probably going to shortchange them on their salary. Very likely, depending on the company, unless they have deep pockets, right? So you've got this circular problem where the candidates hate the experience, HR hates the experience, and engineering managers and hiring managers hate the experience.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking subscribe. This podcast is made possible by Salary.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, that's the next step. So what can people do about this problem?
You remove HR from the process. From leading the process to managing the process. They can manage. They can place the ads for job ads and whatnot. They can approve a job description. The compliance, the nitty-gritty stuff. You know, you can't say, I only want to hire men. Obviously, that's not allowed. I actually saw a job description recently. Must be male. I don't know why. I saw that. And I'm like, that can't be.
Someone's resurrecting something from the 1940s, I think.
Yeah, seriously, right? And so what can be done about it is you remove HR from leading the process to managing compliance, and that's it. The job description is written by the hiring manager because the hiring manager is going to evaluate the candidates that should be screened. The technical individual is going to see this. I want to speak to this guy. I want to that gal and so on and so forth, right? HR will then schedule it all. They're assisting. But this is specifically for technical recruiting. For any other role, knock yourself out. Give it to HR 100%. It's much easier to hire an executive assistant. This is not a complicated thing, right? Or a marketing manager or whatever it is. I assume. I haven't hired an executive assistant yet.
It's not easy these days, Ashri, but okay, we can keep going.
We can keep going, right? So this solves a lot of problems in that the job description is written for a candidate to understand because we can see a job description when it's a candidate that wrote, when it's HR that wrote it and when it's a technologist that wrote it because there's passion in there. They're writing it properly. They're telling you about why this job is good for your career. Like these, there's elements in job description that should always be there. And we see immediately the technical requirements is like 4 or 5 lines tops. Because this is exactly just what we need. And that's it. And usually even then, there's no years of experience. There's, you've done a project with this or you have exposure to that. And that's it. Right? Then we move on to the technical assessment. What really matters for hiring managers is how your mind works, because that you're human. How does your mind work, right? Mm-hmm. How do you solve problems?
Right.
So I advise every CTO that I coach and every hiring manager that I coach and so on, ask them a technical solution question. Ask them to design something verbally, because that answers a lot of questions. Do they understand the technology?
Right.
Good. Can they communicate effectively? Because if they can't communicate effectively, they don't belong on the team. They need to communicate mm-hmm. effectively. Sorry, buddy. Otherwise, there are other companies, if that's something important for you. But if you want a quote-unquote code monkey who's 9 to 5 just and you're chatting with them, if that's what you need, great. Then you can do a technical assessment the traditional way. But if you need a thinker, you need to evaluate that on the spot. And it's not through a question. It's through a situation. We need to design this web application or this mobile app. It has to have this, 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 and that. How would you put it together? Go. Mm-hmm. There is no right answer and there's no wrong answer.
Kind of a take on behavioral interviewing with it. Yeah,
right.
Exactly, yeah. Because I've hired plenty of people who have given me the wrong answer in a technical assessment. But I'm like, but you're thinking in that manner. It's okay if you didn't know the tech. That's fine. That you can Google. But the fact that you knew to go into that particular way of thinking tells me you know what you're doing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Now, if they give me the right answer, I throw money at them. I try to throw money at the screen. I'm like, I want to hire you, right?
But currently doesn't work yet, Asher.
Currently does not work. No. I do tell them, give me your Bitcoin address, but also.
Well, but that brings up another point, though, which is you mentioned about, you know, HR not running that part of the process. In listings, you now have to put, for many states, you have to put a pay range.
Yes.
So are we asking HR to help with that, or is that still coming directly from the technical team?
So HR can validate it. The bigger the company, the more HR is involved, clearly, right? If it's Microsoft, you're not talking to anybody before you talk to 3 HR people, right? Mm-hmm. It's just going to be impossible.
Sure.
But, you know, the majority of the industry is small companies, not Microsoft and Google and YouTube. There are small businesses with 10, 20, 30, 50 developers. That's the majority of the world's economy.
Yep.
Right? And so HR has to dot the I's and cross the T's, make sure, oh, we have to have a salary range. What's the salary range? Usually you have a breakdown of the salary range, mm-hmm. right? And that's as far as it goes. And you give a nice range, not something stupid like $1 to $1 million. Because we've seen that before. That's just
BS. We have seen that, yes.
Right? That's just that. I think they get sued for that at this point because it's...
They get fined, certainly, yes.
They get fined at the very least. So they need to do that part and they need to read through it and make sure that there's no legal snafus, right? There's no legal snafus, but they don't get to rewrite the job description. That's for sure.
It's interesting because we work with a lot of companies doing what we do, and we work with a lot of tech companies, and it's interesting hearing this perspective and also having been in the rooms with the HR people working with the technical teams. And there's definitely a push and pull that's consistent across all of the clients that I've ever worked with in this, where, you know, HR is also tasked, and this gets to what you were talking about with the compliance side of things. HR is tasked with looking at the pay equity component of things. So making sure that what we're hiring somebody in at is fair and equitable within the organization, mm-hmm. not only looking at some of the pay transparency things. And it's also interesting because we always hear HR complaining, God, these technical managers are just, it's like trying to herd cattle, trying to get these guys all to go in the same direction.
Right.
So it's an interesting point that you bring up. And I'm curious about what your experience and perspective is with that push and pull, and what, you know, how do you get past that?
You change the leadership. If you have a culture problem, it is 110% the leader's fault. It is, you know, bleep rolls downhill. Yeah, big time, especially when it comes to culture. That means the CTO or the co-founder or whoever it is, isn't doing a good job, because technology and business should be attached at the hip. They should be talking the same language. And when they are not, And that is 95, 98% of companies, right? Mm-hmm. This is not, I have no data to prove that, just based on empirical evidence of what I've seen in the, in 20 years, have proper technical leadership where the CTO is a business-minded individual and understands how to talk outside of their technical sphere, of this technical bubble. You bring everybody into the fold. But that's what a proper leader does. That's what a proper CEO will do, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't it? They'll bring everybody in together. They're not just going to run sales and that's it. They want to make sure everyone's working together. Well, the CTO is the CEO of technology. Mm-hmm. And more so than any other C-level role, apart from COO, they have to make business decisions as well, right? They have to make business decision, organizational decision, cultural decisions, more so than any other role, right? I would say CEO because they tend to be the right hand of the CEO anyways, mm-hmm. right? So
let me go back to the process for a second. So we're saying that when we're dealing with technical teams and technical hiring, your suggestion is that there's a partnership between HR and the technical team. Mm-hmm. HR runs the administrative side of the process
yep.
and the compliance side of the process, and that the technical team owns the description, the candidate choice, you know, who are we going to pick to bring in? Mm-hmm. They do the initial, so they do the initial screening. Then they are responsible for doing the interviewing process, obviously not the scheduling, but they do the processing of the, you know, bringing them in, doing the assessments, and then choosing them, mm-hmm. as well as the negotiation around pay, right? So you get to the end of the process, and obviously there's going to be that teamwork between HR and the business. So you're seeing that it's a teamwork, but let's let the technology group take it for themselves. Let's let them lead it and yes. we help them out.
Because for the very simple reason that technology is not limited to a bunch of acronyms, right? You know, in my job descriptions, by the way, I put in acronyms, and to make sure candidates actually read it, I also put in some Pokemon names, right? Because believe it or not, there is a technology called Pig and Hadoop, and I'm yes, shoving yep. Snorlax in there. And I'm like, hey, did they catch Snorlax on that one? If yeah, they caught exactly. on that one, I like them. Great. They read my job description. Otherwise, they just applied really quickly, and that's
right.
it. You know?
That's pretty funny.
So it's so much, so far beyond an acronym, right? Because if you tell someone, hey, I need, okay, I'll give you an example. You hire a plumber and you tell them you can only use, you have to be proficient in this brand of screwdriver.
Yeah. Well,
yep.
Well, but I don't use screwdrivers. I use a drill. I'm more efficient. Right. Ah, I'm sorry. That's not the requirement. You need to have 7.5 years in a Phillips screwdriver. You can't use. Yeah, no, we don't talk to people who use drills.
Hey, are you listening to this and thinking to yourself, man, I wish I could talk to David about this? Well, you're in luck. We have a special offer for listeners of the HR Data Labs podcast, a free half-hour call with me about any of the topics we cover on the podcast or whatever is on your mind. Go to salary.com/HRDL consulting to schedule your free 30-minute call today. So Ashri, how does the world that you just described change with generative AI? I mean, AI comes up in every conversation we have. Mm. How does it come up in this? How does it help, or does it get in the way? Is it just a pain in the butt? What does this do to the world of technical recruiting, given the fact that now we can actually code from asking, you know, ChatGPT, hey, put together a script that does this?
Yeah, ChatGPT and coding is cute at the very least.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, if you ask ChatGPT to write you a book, it's going to be a problem. If you ask ChatGPT to write you a very, very specific paragraph about something that's very clearly yep. defined, it can do it a pretty good job at it. Same thing happens with code. If you ask it to write a specific function that does one small thing, I want you to write a function that counts down from this point and whatever, right? It can do that beautifully. For the most part, you'll copy paste it, you'll make a couple of changes, and that's it. But it writes code like a junior developer.
Right. And you also have to make sure the prompts are right. You can't miss a prompt. You have exactly. to really understand what you're asking for.
So, and I push a lot of companies to use ChatGPT. Yes, it's a fantastic productivity booster. How much is it going to boost productivity? I have no idea. There's no way to measure that because at the end of the day, the developer still has to read the code.
Right.
So the thing is with generative, with the way technical knowledge and experience needed to be before, I can use the analogy of a mile deep, an inch wide. You really needed to be an absolute expert in it because you had to go to university, it's engineering, blah, 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 blah. 99% of the developers I hired don't even have university degrees. It's unnecessary anymore, unless you're going into the sciences, because there's a difference between development and engineering. Engineering, you do need the sciences.
Right.
Development, you're slapping together code and you're building cool stuff all day long, right? So that was like, that was pre-internet. You need to have all that knowledge in your head. You need to pass exams. Sure. You need to get certified, all of these things.
Right.
But now with the internet and with generative AI, because you can just ask it a question now and it'll just do it for you, right? You need to have a knowledge that's a mile wide and an inch deep. A little bit of everything and across the board. You need to know how to ask the right question and you will be fine. There are resources on the internet for you. You do not need to remember all of this. It's not necessary anymore. It wasn't necessary for the last 15 years. Surely it is not necessary now. So that's what I'm saying. You need creatives. You need people who can actually think and really solve a problem from multiple angles.
You bring up a good point because, you know, there are traits that we want to see in developers. There are traits we want to see in other people, like consultants too.
Yes.
And your point about them needing to be creative and needing to think differently is definitely something that we have been talking about. And especially, there are lots of organizations that are now pushing for people to hire people of all mental abilities.
Yes.
As well as any, you know, what used to be called disabilities, but they're not. They're different abilities. And we definitely encourage on this podcast that people treat people similarly and treat them fairly. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people who, you know, may have ADHD or have some kind of spectrum disorder, to actually encourage them into things like development because they think so differently, but actually thinks much more effectively solving different types of problems. So it's actually a good point, and we should emphasize it that, yes, we should hire people who have those different abilities, because they actually could be able to solve problems in ways in which we wouldn't think like.
Technology is the great equalizer.
Yeah.
It equalizes all of humanity, because even if the person is deaf, the person is mute, the person cannot communicate in a coherent sentence verbally, doesn't matter. 99.9% of my communications with my developers, and I've managed hundreds of them and teams across the board, is through chat, email, task management. So that person is brilliant, but you know what? Can't communicate properly.
Right.
So what I tell them is, in my technical interviews, the way I run them, would you like to write it down? Take your time. Mm-hmm. You know what? Take your time. Here's the question. Record it. I'll send you a recording link. You record it. I'm not there. You can try as many times as you would like. Go record it. And I also even give people a second chance. You know what? You didn't do very well, but I think you would be able to do very well. Would you like another chance? Now you know me, you're less stressed.
Right.
You know, you've got people with anxiety problems.
Absolutely.
Right.
Basically all developers at this point, because we have to deal with all this garbage, right? And this industry, it's a mess. Yeah. You seem a little anxious today. Let's redo the interview. I want to give you a chance. We change the perspective of technical recruiting and recruiting in general from, I want to filter out the masses, to I want to find a position for you. There is a position for you. You fit somewhere. I want to try and fit you somewhere. And so when you're a really strong hiring manager, you're a really strong leader, and I find those people tend to be parents, because parents really understand that everyone's got a skill. Everyone's good. We just have to find where they're good at. So they'll be able to try and find the position for them. You applied for a software development role? Oh, okay. You know what? That's not really your skill set. We have data modeling. We have a whole department just for that. Let me try and find that role for you. Maybe I can, maybe I can't. You have to be on the side of the candidate. And it's mentally exhausting. It's so exhausting to do the right thing.
I think that's great from my perspective as a parent, because then hopefully someday my son will find the Roblox developer job that he so desperately will fit quite well because he loves playing Roblox and that's not going away anytime soon. So
my kid is 9 years old and I'm programming with him and I told him,
that's great.
Now we're just going to write code that does your homework for you. Because if you can explain long division in code, you got it, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
You have taught a machine how to do it. You're good.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, Ashri, thank you so much. This has been delightful to have this conversation with you. And well, maybe we'll have to get back with you on another topic around recruiting as things evolve. But thank you so much for your time today.
Anytime. I love it.
Dwight, thank you.
Thank you. Good to be with you today, Ashri.
Thank you very much, Dwight.
Take care, everybody, and stay safe.
That was the HR Data Labs podcast. If you liked the episode, please subscribe. And if you know anyone that might like to hear it, please send it their way. Thank you for joining us this week, and stay tuned for our next episode. Stay safe.